present has placed in the center the priority of mission. We were formed as a denomination for the purpose of mission. It's been said that the church is the only organization, perhaps, that it doesn't exist for itself. Most organizations exist for itself, right? The church exists for everyone outside. And we in the Covenant Church have been able to maintain this. Right now, as you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. One of the things in Covenant World Relief, obviously, we want to be prepared as helping the wider church to respond in times of emergencies. But we believe that the road to transformation is more than simply responding to disasters. And so after the immediate relief, even now, for example, in Texas, they've started this, after the first responders and the immediate relief, now there's this long recovery that's not going to be weeks, it's not going to be months, it's going to be years, and that's the place for the church to be. Fortunately, we have several churches there. Just from Hurricane Harvey, the Covenant Church has given already over $250,000, which will be used not just this week, not next week, but in the months and years to come. We believe that after the time of recovery, there is a long, much longer term of transformation, the road that we are all walking on. This is the road where God is at work in us, transforming us more and more into His image, opening our eyes to be able to see the world the way He sees the world. And this is the focus of Covenant World Relief. But right now, you've seen the stories. Please know that our churches and partners are engaged. In South Asia, you probably haven't heard much about this. But because of the poverty, the lack of infrastructure, the flooding and mudslides have killed much more than 1,000 people. It has affected 40 million people. Most recently now, we're hearing about Mexico earthquake. Just yesterday, or Friday, we sent our first grant to the Covenant Church of Mexico. Previous to that, there's another partner that we've been engaged with in Mexico, and we will be there engaged for the long haul. The time is really short this morning, so if I'm speaking fast, I apologize, but there's a passage of scripture that I would like to look at that some of you who have grown up the church have heard this story probably many times over, but I'd like you to hear it afresh this morning. It's found in 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. In the Pew Bible, it's page 570. It's 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that he revered the Lord. But now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves." Elisha replied to her, "How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" "Your servant has nothing there at all," she said, "except a small jar of oil." Elisha said, "Go around and ask all your neighbors for empty jars. Don't ask for just a few. Then go inside and shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour oil into all the jars, and as each is filled, put it to one side." She left him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars to her, and she kept pouring. When all the jars were full, she said to her son, "Please bring me another one." But he replied, "There is not a jar left." Then the oil stopped flowing. She went and told the man of God, and he said, "Go sell the oil and pay your debts. You and your sons can live on what is left." Here we have a story of a woman who is desperate. She's a widow, probably among the most vulnerable people in the world even today are widows. She is filled with great fear. She's lost the love of her life, and now she's afraid she may lose her sons as well, because she's been left with a debt. So the prophet It's very interesting. The prophet comes, and his first question when he hears her problem is, how can I help you? Now, that's a very natural question. When you hear about someone who's in a desperate situation, it's just natural to say, how can I help you? It's the second question which sometimes we fail to ask, but the prophet didn't fail. And it's that second question which is so powerful, because it's a theological basis for working with people in need. The question is, how can I help you? And then, what do you have in your house? What do you have? What's her response? Oh, I have nothing at all, except for a little bit of oil. Now, those of us who are a couple of thousand years later reading this can look at it and say, no, she actually had a lot more. And this is something that we often miss when we work with people that we consider to be poor and needy. If we had more time, I'd like to do this in discussion, but I'm just going to throw it back at you and say, look at this passage. What does she have? She has a house, right? She has two sons. She apparently has her health. And then something that sometimes is overlooked is, you know, the prophet said, go out and collect jars. So what was going to limit the number of jars that she could collect? Her number of friends. This woman apparently had a lot of relationships in the community. We know that because as God carries out this amazing miracle where he takes that small bit of oil and she just continues to pour and pour and pour, and it keeps pouring until when? Until the last jar is full. And then the prophet says, there's so much there, he says, okay, take some of it, pay off your debt. She is now debt-free. Her sons can stay with her. Not only that, live on the rest. Look what God has done. He's taken what little she had and transformed, brought transformation to her house. She was in a desperate situation, thinking that she was going to lose everything, and now God has restored dignity and a livelihood to her. This is the way our God works. We saw it in the feeding of the 5,000, in the Matthew and Mark passages. Jesus asks a similar question. He says, he starts with, when he says, let's feed them, and there's a kind of doubt from the disciples, he says, how many loaves do you have? Right? They said five. And you know what happened, right? How about in Exodus, when Moses being told, he's standing before the holy God and being told that he's going to help lead the children of Israel out of slavery. And God is telling him all these things, and all of a sudden Moses says, but what if they don't listen to me? And you can tell he's just very fearful. What's the question of God at that point? What do you have in your hand? Remember that? And Moses, yeah, I have a stick. But we all know that staff, that stick, God used to part the Red Sea. God used to give water. We have a God who takes what we have, takes what we think may be very little, and he multiplies it for his kingdom. I'll tell you, in 8.5 years being part of Covenant World Relief, we are part of a pretty small denomination. And Covenant World Relief, as you talk about different organizations and think about different organizations doing other things in the world like community development and disaster relief, we're not very big. But I'll tell you, I'm amazed what God has done with the faithful generosity of God's people, with the partnerships that we have around the world. I just ask that you will continue to follow us either through the newsletter, through Facebook. Catherine is constantly updating our Facebook. There are so many stories that we don't have time to tell you this morning, but I'm going to tell you a few of the ways in which our partners understand what the prophet Elisha understood. When they're working with the needy in their communities, one of their first questions in their mind is, what's here? What do we have? One thing is personal experience. The Hindustani Covenant Church in India got involved in the red light district of Pune, It's the third largest red light district in India. And one of their first questions was, how are we going to do this? What do we have? We have a former commercial sex worker, Gangabai, became the coordinator of this ministry. Rather than someone from the outside coming in, she had all the relationships. She knew who people were. They trusted her. And through this, they've been able to set up a ministry for children, the children of the commercial sex workers. Through Women Ministries, a few years ago, there was a campaign called Break the Chains. They were able to build the Home of Hope, and now women that come out are being cared for, and Covenant World Relief has been a part of helping to sustain and maintain this program. One of the things that some of you who have been around Covenant events, maybe in this church, if you haven't used these, I can get them. They are communion wafers. These wafers are actually made by women who have come out of the commercial sex industry. And it's great because they have this way of explaining it. We used to sell our flesh. We used to sell our bodies. Now, we have this great privilege and honor of making the body of Christ. What do you have in your house, in your community? We have transformed women. In South Africa, they formed groups of women together to come together, to save together, to borrow together, but it's much more than that. These are like little house churches. They come and worship together. They come and learn together. They support each other, but they also, through the process of transformation, start like the church is supposed to be doing all the time, looking outside into the community. And so these women, a year ago when I was there, I saw these women coming down and I said, is it all right if I take their photo, because we're focusing on access to clean water, and these women are carrying water. They said, well, there's one thing you should know. They've come a long ways. They're carrying water, but they're not carrying it for themselves. They're carrying it for a family in the community where the father has been injured and the mother is off working, and they're helping in the community. They're going in and taking care of the family. They're cooking. They're washing clothes. These are poor women who have been transformed and are now caring for those around them. And on the way out, they said, oh, there's a widow. She used to live on the edge of town, but she got robbed. She's so scared. So we invited her to move more to the center of the town, and we're building a house for her. Youth. In Monterrey, Mexico, there's an organization called the Family Development Foundation, or FundoFam in Spanish, started by Covenant missionaries about 20 years ago. It's now completely led by local Mexican people. What's amazing, as they reach out into this community, which has been beset with violence because of drug cartels and other criminals that are in the community, a lot of the children have experienced violence. And as they reach out, they're reaching out to the children, and not just doing classes and hoping that things get better. They're actually taking these children, discipling them, and these are becoming the leaders. And I was there, I was just there a few weeks ago. Catherine and I were just there. But as the people stood up, who were now full-time, part-time, and staff, the vast majority are people who actually come from that community. So they've taken the youth with the mindset of, these are our future leaders, and now they're leading the organization. What do you have? Finance. A lot of times when you work with the poor, people assume that there's no financial capability. But what I've learned over these last 8.5 years is that any place you go, people can save if they're given the opportunity. And so we have women in Kenya who have been started forming these groups and have been saving together. And they come and they share the stories of how, as they work together, as they worship together, they are able to plant together, raise crops together. And the men have become so envious that they formed their own groups. Labor. This is an issue for especially dominant culture North Americans who love to help people. I mean, I'm a product of my father. That's what he always liked to do, things for people. It's a really dangerous thing because you rob people of the opportunity of doing things for themselves. And so in Honduras, we're partnering with an organization there that really understands community organizing. And they get people together, and they help them gain access to clean water. But from the beginning, it's understood that the local people are the owners of this project. And it's the local people that do all of the labor. There is some expertise, there's some engineers that come in, but they're local. But they come in and they teach, and the people do the labor. And the people are so proud of their work, so proud of the fact that they have, through their labor, they have brought water to their community. And this woman, at one of the inauguration ceremonies I went to, she was doing a little skit, and she was talking about the fact that every morning she would go down the steep hills. And because of the whole issue of gravity, that you know, that when she's going down, her jar is empty, and then she fills it, and she has to carry it back up. She said, I thought I would be doing this for the rest of my life. She took that jar, she threw it into the air, and shouted, never again. And it came down and crashed. And she went, and in those pieces, I went out, and I have one now that I keep to remember that moment. Networks. There is an amazing covenant church in South Sudan that doesn't get nearly enough publicity. The kind of conditions. They're a church that was started in exile, started in Ethiopia, went to Sudan. Eventually, Sudan became where they are, South Sudan, the Republic of South Sudan. But now, in December of 2013, a civil war started, and now they've gone back to Ethiopia. The leadership have. And they are, again, once again, a church in exile. But they know the importance of joining together with others. And so when the disasters happen, whether it be because of the war or because of flooding or because of famine, they join together with other organizations. And, you know, just as an added thing, in their applications when it comes and they're asking for funds, they're also putting the in-kind things. People in their church that are refugees that have virtually nothing are donating also to the response. And of course, what a great asset the local church is. The Evangelical Covenant Church of Kenya, when I first started, was a church of about 50. And they had a Covenant World Relief project. They were doing a poultry project. But at that time, there were 240 Congolese refugees who showed up. They had walked all the way from the eastern part of Congo to Nairobi. Some of them had died along the way. And Pastor Simon Kamau said, you're welcome. We're going to figure this out somehow. We're the church. We need to respond. There was no issue about papers, and in fact, what they've done is they've helped these people become legal residents. They've helped them learn English. They've helped them get vocational training, and a big thing is they've gotten children into schools all through the church. And then finally, leaders. After the tsunami of South Asia in December of 2004, it's kind of distant now, but I hope you remember how tragic that tsunami was. There was estimated at least 230,000 people who died from the tsunami that hit mainly eight different countries in South Asia. There's one organization called the Sustainable Development Relief Foundation in Thailand. It's a long story that I will tell you just briefly now, but they got connected to HIV/AIDS affected communities, to people who had been shunned by the communities and by their families. They heard about a God who loved them even though they had AIDS. And they started like little support groups, which are house churches around South Thailand. And not long ago, Ron and I got to go and, we wrote, the man on the right had just come from the emergency room the night before because he was still affected by AIDS, even though he's getting medication. But he's the leader of this group. And he apologized and said, there was supposed to be a much larger group today for worship and for baptism, but this is what we have, and we went out to the ocean, and these people were baptized. Who's the leader? It's Wiroot. His mother had already bought his coffin. She already had his funeral picture set up. She thought he was dead. He met Jesus. He was transformed, and he became the leader of this small group. These are just some of the stories, some of the examples of the kinds of people that we have the privilege of working with around the world. God has allowed, through people like Clifford Bjorklund, Tim Eck, Jim Sundholm, through covenant missionaries over decades, to lead us into partnerships and into relationships that allowed us this last year to be involved in over 100, I think it's 104 projects in 32 countries. How is it possible that this little denomination with this little ministry called Covenant World Relief is able to do all of this? We serve an amazing God, but we also have a church where people really care. For Edgebrook Covenant Church, the question, the question also is, what do we have in this house? Who's here? What do we have in this community? It's so great to hear about the Harvest Festival celebration coming up on Saturday, the whole community. What's here? How can we get engaged? How can we use what God already has here for His glory and His kingdom?